We'll get started with Portland Planning Sustainability Commission. This is the first meeting of the Portland Plan hearings, and so it's an exciting day. Kind of order of business today is we'll have a consent agenda, and then we'll have a presentation by the mayor, Sam Adams, and then we'll have Jill Zinder and Eric do a presentation of what's in the plan. And then we'll have public testimony. We'll take a break about 7:15. And then at 8:30, depending on testimony, we'll have a work session with the commission to talk about what we heard today. If you plan to testify today, there's individuals in the back here that you can fill out a card, and we'll call you in order and have you come up and testify. For the consent agenda, it's consideration of minutes from the October 11th commission meeting. Do I hear a motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor? Opposed? It passes. Want to welcome you again to the Portland Plan. This is the first, again, of the three hearings on the Portland Plan. The next one will be at Park Rose, and the last one will be at downtown. So thank you for coming. There's multiple ways to have input for us. You can verbally attend. You can come to one of the meetings and verbally testify. There will be a three-minute period for you to provide your testimony. You can email us at pdxplan@portlandoregon.gov, and you can use regular mail at 1900 Southwest 4th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97201. As we hear testimony today, I would encourage you to not look at us and just provide your testimony, because we will be taking notes and listening intensely. We may be going back for more water, but we are listening throughout your testimony. And we're going to try to keep it moving so we can hear everybody today. And with that, I'd like to welcome Mayor Sam Adams and Joe Zinder from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Mayor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the Planning Commission. I am very pleased to be here, and I want to start by thanking the great team of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, including yourselves and the input that you have made to this effort to date individually, and also the guidance that you have provided to the emerging Portland Plan. I also want to thank the team, the staff team as well, Planning and Sustainability. This is a 122-page strategic plan for a city that we're not aware has ever been done before, a holistic strategic plan. So there's a lot of innovation here because we took inspiration from a variety of places, especially local inspiration, but this is unique, a unique effort. And so we're going to go quickly through this. You have written copies, and hopefully everyone in the audience has written copies of the actual PowerPoint presentation. And of course, the document is on the back table as well. Prosperous, healthy, and equitable. Those, in three words, are what we want for our city and what this plan seeks to move us to become. It means creating more well-paying jobs. It means advancing social equity to the degree we have never advanced it before. It means improving educational outcomes, and it means supporting healthy, connected communities. Those are the key action items to be a prosperous, healthy, and equitable city. We challenged ourselves to put the plan on a single piece of paper. And this is that distillation. We're going to go through and reference back sort of through the Joe and myself, sort of how each of, give a little detail and flesh out some examples in each of these sections, but it is the framework of equity. The box on the upper left is how we make decisions, how we work together and with our partners, and where we invest our efforts. The three integrated strategies, sort of the engine of the plan, is infused with equity throughout and focused on the policies and actions that we all know in the real world are interconnected. So these are organized, but we all know that they are interconnected. We have to organize them into those sort of three circles, four circles, but they are all connected. Measurements of success. It is very rare that you will find a municipal plan of any size with actual measures of success, much less 12 measures of success. And that is a short, small number. As we will get into later, these are measures of success that we can actually get feedback on today. So are they the best? Are they the ultimate? Over time, they will evolve and improve, but we start out with actual measurable measures of success. And then the action areas at the bottom, both in the short term, 5-year short term, and then the longer 25-year action items come in two forms, citywide, and then geographically specific as well. For those that are watching on TV, why plan? Why plan now? We're in the midst of such a difficult time. But it is not only required by state law that we come up with a new comprehensive plan for the city, but it also is at a very good time in the history of the city to plan. There's a lot of change that requires us to pivot. There's a lot of success to build on. And there are vulnerabilities that we can address, even in these difficult times. But for example, the working poor made up 23% of Multnomah County households in 2005-07, high number. Median household income for Black and African American households is about half of the citywide median for all groups. I think Portlanders have a higher expectation for ourselves than this kind of a number. 46% of our region's Native American children live in poverty, not good enough. In the 2000-2008 business cycle, Portland had very little job growth, 0.1% average annual job growth rate. We've said it before, say it again, our quality of life is not matched by a quality economy. Only 53% of Portland's high school students graduate in 4 years, 23% drop out, and for students of color, the dropout rate is much higher. Graduation rates for youth of color and youth in poverty are significant lower, as I mentioned, and the 4-year graduation rate for Native American youth is only 4 out of 10 Native American 8th graders will go on to graduate high school on time. Chronic disease rates have increased, even though we get highly rated for biking, walking, top city in the United States. 53% of Multnomah County residents are overweight or obese. Portland and Multnomah County's total carbon emissions are 2% below actual 1990 levels. It's a major accomplishment, but that's high praise on a low national standard. And by 2030, emissions need to be 40% below 1990 levels. So, as I mentioned in my preface comments, this is a different kind of plan. It's a different kind of plan because it seeks to be a strategic plan for the city, small c, not capital C city. It involves all of our partners, as you know, and even though times are tough, the reason to do it now, I believe, since we started the effort, has actually become more compelling. Everyone is cutting, and that requires us to look beyond jurisdiction, to look beyond missions of jurisdiction, and to align around what people need. As a strategic plan, it is, as mentioned, it has to be seeking to be to achieve resiliency for the city, and it has to be nimble. The short-term actions will be updated by future decision makers. It is fundamentally a plan about people. And it begins with, I really want to commend everyone involved. This has been a two-way dialogue. It hasn't been simply go out, ask people, what do you want? It has been go out, present folks our best distillation of where we're at, and then it's a conversation about where should we go? What do we want to accomplish based on where we're at? It's also very different in that as we have been going along in the planning stage, we have also been establishing linchpin partnerships, key partnerships. Examples of that are the Cradle to Career effort that has really taken on that concentric circle, having piece of that concentric circle around prosperity and health that has to do with more success around education. The Office of Equity takes on a piece for the city of Portland as it relates to the equity plan elements. When I mentioned there were citywide, I also very unique about this plan. It has taken a lot of effort on the staff's part. This plan also recognizes while there is a citywide, there is also unique challenges based on geography and that one size does not fit all. This is groupings of the city based with an eye to both existing neighborhood association boundaries, but also trying to create some sub areas that allow for a little more consistency in looking at the city in smaller units. Right now, you have eastern neighborhoods that are a huge swath of the city, and so we wanted to break it down. We wanted to recognize that there are unique opportunities and challenges within, for example, East Portland, within North Portland, and that there are, if you've ever read the book Patterns, the Pattern of Language, it sort of recognizes the unique sub areas that are clustered around some main streets as well. They range in population from 2,500 households in Hayden Island to 21,000 in terms of the smallest. In terms of the largest, Central City has 21,000 households. So Hayden Island, 2,500, Central City, 21,000. But they average about 11,000 households each on average. You've been part of this along the way, so you know this, but for those watching, this has gone through four phases, each building on the other. Each iterative, this phase, has the opportunity to iterate even more before we go to the City Council. Some facts, 13,000 Portland youth and adults completed surveys in the first phase. 2,500 Portlanders thus far have attended workshops. In the first phase of the facts, those 13,000 folks completed surveys. In the first phase, 2,500 attended workshops. In the second phase, we had about 8,000 Portlanders attend workshops or filled out surveys. Next, we focused on more qualitative discussion in terms of phase three, and that all sort of comes together in phase four. So you are going to be seeing, if you peeked at the plan, you are going to be seeing new work that you haven't seen before, but it is a continued distillation. It is a continued infusion of the expert staff that we have that is recognized as the best local planning and sustainability local government staff in the United States. These are partners, again, even though the old plan of 25 odd years ago says comprehensive plan, it didn't involve a comprehensive partnership of the public sector. This does, and I want to thank them. It's been a lot of work for them. So we're going to dig into how this sort of works together. and I'm going to turn it over to Joe.
Great. Thank you. So let's go through the elements of the Portland plan. First, the plan is built on a framework of equity at the foundation of the three strategies that we'll talk about here. And this equity framework is a new way of working that puts equity, achieving equity and reducing disparities front and center in our policymaking and decisions, and spells out some specific actions to do this. It starts with a definition of what is it that we mean by equity. And here is that definition, where equity is when everyone has access to the opportunities necessary to satisfy their essential needs, advance their well-being, and achieve their full potential. We have a shared fate as individuals within a community and communities within society. All communities need the ability to shape their own present and future, and equity is both a means to a healthy community and an end that benefits all of us. The case for equity is drawn from the value statements that the citizens of Portland have already made in this effort and in Vision PDX, but also there's a case for putting equity at the foundation related to prosperity. We can't achieve the economic prosperity that we desire as a city with the amount of disparity that's present. To be a city that's able to adapt to change, reducing disparities and having greater equity makes you more resilient and able to do that. Greater equity and reducing disparities prevents more costly problems from coming up later, so it's a preventative kind of value or benefit from focusing on equity. And Portland has demonstrated the ability to lead in topics related to conservation and sustainability in the past, and this is one where we think it's time and important to assert that kind of leadership again. Specifically, the framework for equity calls for, has several elements that talk about how we are going to act differently to address the issue. The first two of these shown in the slide really talk about how we do ask the question and give direction on how our actions affect disparity and making those decisions vis-a-vis policy and public services in a way that increases equity. The second group talks about transparency and inclusion. So having more inclusive participation and more voices as part of our decision making will make better decisions. We're going to launch a racial and ethnic justice initiative because of the persistent disparities, especially around race and ethnicity, that have existed for too long. And finally, increasing our internal accountability really means we need to get the data and measure how our policies and how disparities are actually being experienced in the city to be able to make a difference with them. That's sort of the actions of the equity framework. But the other point about the Equity Foundation shown here is that the other three strategies that are in the Portland plan also include specific actions to address disparities and increase equity. Now we're going to talk about those three strategies some more. So built on this foundation of equity, there's a strategy around thriving and educated youth. There's a strategy to increase economic prosperity and household and affordability. And there's a strategy to create a healthy and connected city. So in each of these strategies, when you look at the plan, you're going to see statements of goals and objectives. Where do we want to get to in 25 years? Guiding policies, which talk about what we will do over 25 years to get there generally. And then also a five-year action plan that's much more specific about actions and the partners who can or will lead them address to where we start now to accomplish what these strategies are about. So let's look at the three strategies, thriving and educated youth. This strategy, the overriding goal of which is spelled out here, is focused on the success of youth, starting with preschool, but also looking all the way through their moving into a career or an occupation, that whole sort of period of setting a person up for success. The activities or the elements that are in this strategy are shown on this slide, where we, in terms of a culture of high expectations and achievement for all, it spells out the expectation that our education opportunities will result in a degree or certificate to get you actually the credential and experience you need to be able to succeed. A shared ownership for youth success refers to really the Cradle to Career initiative, which is a countywide initiative of the public and private sectors that's organizing around a set of priorities to improve educational outcome in our public education system. The supportive neighborhoods and communities ask the questions, what difference can our communities and and the quality of our neighborhoods make in the success of youth, and how can our investments and actions be more supportive of that? And finally, looking at the facilities that our public school systems need and the barriers to accomplishing those facilities and resources, looking at combining resources and activities to be able to meet the 21st century schools more efficiently.
And I just, at this point, I want to thank Bill Scott is here, and our good friend from Chair Kogan's office is here. And without their two efforts and more, the Cradle to Career effort would not have happened. But that is a durable, long-range, comprehensive from we like to say from flirtation until grave, but somewhere along the continuum to ensure that we're as smart as we possibly can be, both collectively and individually.
The second of the three strategies deals with economic prosperity and affordability. And this strategy is built around an emphasis or a focus on business growth and business success, but coupled with that is also household economic success and prosperity. It's both the jobs that are produced by a strong business sector and getting residents into those jobs so that their prosperity is also sharing in a growing economy. The elements that you'll see when you look at the economic prosperity section focused on job growth is first a group of elements that are really express a commitment to carrying out the city's economic development strategy, a focus on traded sector industries where they add the most to growing local resources and local economy, focus on increasing the leadership that has emerged in Portland on sustainability and green clean tech and that form of innovation, and also an emphasis on our new strategy regarding neighborhood economic development. It also moves on to some more traditional or core needs. We're a trade gateway that's always been a strength and important part of the city, so it focuses on the infrastructure needed to ensure the continued competitiveness of that sector, and also making sure that we have land and space for the industry to grow, aligning our training also, our workforce development, with these sectors that we think are being are where job growth is going to happen. On the household side, the strategy focuses on housing, redefining what affordability means, not just in term to be not just how much your housing unit costs, but the other kind of costs that affect a household's budget, primarily transportation, making sure that our housing opportunities are located where you can have affordable transportation and other services, supporting the development of a full range of household types, including workforce housing, which is not very low income, not full market rate housing, and coupling that with transit. And finally, looking at the services and sort of workforce training and other sort of economic safety net services that benefit our households and ensure affordability. The final strategy has to deal with how our neighborhoods grow, and it's called Healthy Connected City. Here we're looking at our neighborhoods and their ability to meet household needs and to do so in a sustainable way. It includes housing, it includes commerce, it includes environment, it includes transportation, and a different way of looking at these neighborhoods. It brings our concern about the built environment's impact on the health of individuals front and center. And just when you think of the neighborhoods in your own neighborhood in the city of Portland, you can see, and what we've learned is that there are clearly built environment factors that affect human health and make for a neighborhood that's resilient and sustainable. Increasing those qualities as part of the strategy. And then those neighborhoods are also not exist in isolation. They're being connected to each other, and the rest of the city is critically important. And we've identified three types of those connections that we think, if we focus on them, we can put a system in place that really gets to core needs. And these are increasing the connections between habitat areas and those habitat areas in our neighborhoods, a natural connection, neighborhood greenways, which are safe, comfortable streets for especially encouraging active transportation, being able to get more of your needs met without necessarily driving, and then civic corridors, which are streets like Barber, which are in Sandy and 82nd, these big transit streets that we have that in the future are going to be opportunities for the city to grow. They're not great streets now. A great city deserves great streets, and civic corridors call us to making them that. When you put the pieces together, the network looks like this, where it's a set of these connections and these kind of hubs that serve the neighborhood needs and are supported by a market that will actually let them survive.
And so in our preview with at lunch last week, there was confusion about how this depiction, this slide, compares with the sub areas. And the sub area slide earlier in the presentation, that shows the sort of how we've grouped the city. These circles show basically the core or the center of most all of those 24 sub areas. So this is how we connect the heart of each one of our areas of the city, in at least major sort of areas of the city, centers of the city, together with these healthy habitat, healthy civic streets.
The last major element of the plan is our measures of success. We need to be able to track our progress, like the mayor said earlier, to be able to know where we're getting, but also to be able to learn about this, how effective our different proposed or different actions that we're undertaking are being, and to make course corrections as we go along. We've identified 12 elements that we think are we need to be able to track to.
In no particular order.
Yeah, in no particular order, that align up with the goals and the purposes of the three strategies. In the plan, you will also see that for each of these measures of success, we've given information about where we are today. We've linked it to, without forecasting that line, but we've linked it to where at least our plan at this point says we want to get to. We provide information about why it's important. We provide information about national, international, other benchmark cities so we can compare ourselves against the best practices in the world. And we've also taken the step of breaking this down to indicators can start to help us see how the different issues facing the city play out differently across different parts of the city. And so going back to those sub areas that we talked about earlier, the mayor showed earlier, we've prepared a set of local metrics to help tease out that relate back to the citywide metrics that help tease out how those different parts of town are performing. Information so that something like the East Portland Action Plan can be informed about how it's performing along these different measures, and also get a sense of what's most important in terms of a place to start. Finally, how will we implement the plan? You've already heard about the partnerships and the other the Portland Plan partners that have helped us develop this. The plan itself will be linked to annual budget cycles so that we start to build in, as a strategic plan can give you, a strategic focus to our city budgeting and hopefully with our partners. It's got 5-year actions that are going to, that we're about to review and through the hearings that are both citywide and local. A good deal of the plan will be lead to new policies and an update that will be incorporated in the new comprehensive plan that the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability is also developing. These are our long-range decision tools. And finally, we're going to be tracking progress through our measures of success.
So in addition to, I gave an example of Cradle to Career as a citywide partnership. That's actually a countywide partnership around improving educational achievement for everyone. There are others. Those will become even more formal as the timeline for this, as this becomes more polished and eventually is approved by you with your input and then also by the City Council. But they are partnerships as well around geography. And so the partnerships with existing business district and neighborhood associations, with advocacy groups for equity in each and every one of the actions of the plan. That's our overview. We did it in how many minutes?
30
minutes. We still have, you know, we look forward to your input. We need some we need some interested eyes on it. We look forward to going out with the public, to the public as well, through your efforts and the hearings of the City Council. We're proud of this, but we know that it's not quite done yet, and so we look forward to the remaining couple of months moving to council approval.
say well done to a mayor, but well done.
That's right.
Yeah. Joe, thank you very much, too. I know we're not supposed to ask questions, but any quick questions for the mayor before we move on?
Along the way, the word 20-minute neighborhood got abandoned, and that was something that resonated with a lot of us in terms of connectivity. I hope it comes back in some format so we understand that connectivity means people who can walk, bike, or easily get to their important services in 20 minutes or less.
Well, the concept is definitely embedded in all this. We really worked hard to ask ourselves the question, what is something in service to? What's the highest, what is, and that's how we got to prosperous, healthy, and equitable. The 20-minute neighborhood is in service to, should be in service to all three of these things. What do streetcars do? Habitat restoration does? It's all in service to, in some ways, I view these as our highest ideals as a city. So it's definitely there. I still use it. But it now turns, we've sort of turned it into healthy and connected neighborhoods. Because the other part that the 20-minute neighborhood didn't fully flesh out, and I know you've spoken to this in the past, is that need for connection between those hubs.
Engstrom up, and Eric's going to go through the various documents before us and kind of explain that, and then we'll move to testimony.
Thank you, Andre. Is this on? Okay. I just wanted to go through some of just the more mundane sort of how we're going to operate here. You all hopefully have a copy of the plan. I want to remind you that there are actually two copies. There's the short version and the long version. And so a point to be made at the beginning, because you may get people referring to page numbers, and it's a good idea to just check in about which version they're referring to. You should also have a memo with the staff's clarifications and corrections. And we are going to be delivering a memo to you on a kind of a regular tempo as we go through this process to update you on the testimony we've received so far, particularly the written testimony that may not come at the hearing, but also any clarifications we need to make. And so this first one is light on the testimony part because it hadn't been available for very long, but it does include a couple just corrections that we made in some of the data. You should also have a map of neighborhood association boundaries with you, which is, to the extent you have geographic-specific testimony, we thought this might be helpful to correlate the traditional neighborhood association system with these sub-areas or hubs that we've referred to in the plan, and so that hopefully is a tool for you. After each hearing, the way we've structured this is to give you a 30-minute period of discussion at the end of each hearing so that you can immediately sort of start to track what you heard. And then we'll of course be taking notes, but then you'll have a longer work session after that third hearing to really tie it back together again. But we wanted to have that initial session so that everything's fresh in your mind as you go through this. Ultimately, what we're hoping for, obviously, is a recommendation to bring this forward to the planning committee or to the city council. And one piece of, I guess, just how we go about this is not a code project. So we don't necessarily have to have that recommendation be line for line, strike through, underline. But what we're hoping for is something that gives us clear direction in terms of what kind of changes you want to see as we bring this forward to city council. And so we'll be, as we get towards that work session, we'll start to talk about the structure of that. And as you're having your initial conversations, what we're trying to do is identify what are those big themes that we want to highlight in those instructions to the Bureau as we move forward. So are there any questions about just the logistics of how Andre also went over the three hearings and the timeline for that? All right, we're ready.
All right, we're going to begin with public testimony. But before I do that, I want to welcome back one of our commissioners that took some time out. Jill Sherman. Welcome back. And so now we're going to do the public testimony. I will be calling out names, and those names will come from a testimony card. So if you wanted to have testimony, if you can fill them out and provide them to Julie. We will take these cards up through 7:30, and then we'll cut it off and do all the testimony. Remind you that your comments are limited to 3 minutes. If you have written testimony along with your verbal comments, please give them to Julie, and she'll make sure that, as Eric said, we will receive all written comments, a copy of those comments. And we'll take a break about 7:15. At 7:30, we'll get the last of the comment cards from people, and we'll finish up about 8:30, and then we'll spend about a half an hour having a discussion about your testimony. So the first three are Lisa Bates, Katie Sawick, and Roger Anthony.
Hi. Thanks for having us. We've spoke with you before. It's great to see you here in my neighborhood, Humboldt, at my neighborhood high school, Jefferson High. Thanks for coming. My name's Lisa Bates. I'm on the faculty at Portland State and the Toulon School of Urban Studies and Planning, and I'm also a member and currently co-lead with Bob Glasscock, who's also here, of the Technical Advisory Group on Equity for the Portland Plan. We've been working on this document, thinking about mapping out and guiding this work for a couple of years. So I'm going to talk sort of big picture about our reaction to the plan. Katie's going to talk a little bit more, and Roger about some of the specific tools for implementation. We know that the challenges the mayor and Joe highlighted are real, not just in the data, but in our lived reality. But we also know something about the fact that we're living in a changing world. We have an aging population, a population that will become more physically disabled, more diverse, we have more immigration, we have a changing economy, new jobs, new technologies, we face energy crisis and global warming. And we forecast these changes and their potential effects. It's easy to imagine that our challenges are going to persist or even get worse in the future. And we believe that without a fundamental change, that's exactly what could happen. Our climate action and our sustainability plans have recognized that when it comes to the natural environment, we needed to make a fundamental shift towards sustainability as a model for thinking and acting with attention to long-term consequences. But what we really need to do now, and the strategy of the Portland Plan, is to make that same kind of a fundamental shift toward equity, towards social sustainability, a critical precondition for achieving our goals of environmental protection and economic prosperity. So now we have a plan to make that change in terms of policy, resource allocations, programming, and public engagement. This is a plan to shape the future, not to accept our projections, but to achieve a vision that we set out for ourselves. So I want to say a couple of things about the vision of the TAG. We envision that as our population of school children becomes more racially diverse, our educational system develops the cultural competency for our Black, Brown, and English language learning children, raising achievement levels so that we can say that every school in our system is a school that's good enough for all of our kids. We envision that today's newly arriving immigrants will be fully engaged in the civic infrastructure of our city, participating equally from our neighborhood associations to our budget advisory committees to our elected offices. We envision that our growing population of elders and Portlanders with mobility limitations will not be isolated socially or physically by inaccessible facilities, but will be able to meet together in our public spaces and also in our private homes built with universal design. Yes, I am wrapping it up. And that children born today into poor families will be in 25 years engaged in satisfying living wage work in a vibrant economy. So in short, that nothing about us that we can't change will determine how we'll thrive over the next 25 years and beyond. We believe that this plan is a path for getting there through strategic actions, through coordinated actions, through the Office of Equity and Human Rights. And we appreciate the work both of the TAG members, the Bureau of Sustainability, and the Mayor's Office for embracing this vision and laying out a path that we can follow to achieve it.
Commission. My name is Katie Sawicki, and I'm the Policy Associate at the Urban League of Portland. We've been involved in the Portland planning process from its very, very early stages through the Equity Technical Advisory Group and other capacities, and we commend the Bureau on engaging the community in new ways. The Urban League of Portland supports many of the equity goals and the key strategies, action plans. We believe the how is key to the success of the Portland plan's objectives. With this in mind, in January, the Urban League of Portland brought together a group of local organizations and individuals, including people of color, organizations, health advocates, academics, and city staff committed to racial equity work in our city, to advocate for the use of racial equity strategies and tools in city decision making. There was a recognition that equity tools and mechanisms need to be created and operationalized in policy and decision making, service delivery, allocation of city funds, program development, and other responsibilities of the city that affect the public. We've engaged staff from the key city bureaus to discuss what was needed to successfully implement these tools, at what decision points should equity questions be asked, and where positive and effective practice was already taking place, which could be replicated and built upon. We have also engaged other cities who have successfully employed similar tools on a decision-making level, such as Seattle's Racial and Social Justice Initiative. We have learned that there is no simple answer. Rather, a combination of strong leadership, a citywide commitment to change, internal capacity building, and customized tools are all critical to incorporating equity into the city's day-to-day work and culture. It is our hope that all bureaus and agencies in the city will develop customized tools to meet their needs and purposes with the central aim of achieving equity in all operations of the city. Currently, we are putting together an end-of-year equity strategies guide, which will highlight what we have learned thus far, the connections we have made with our city partners, and lay out a set of critical components we believe must be a part of any city bureau's equity work. Implementation of the Portland Plan must incorporate mechanisms that ensure systemic change in the way the city works. This is why we advocated for the Office of Equity. We hope the discussion around the Portland Plan and implementation magnifies why the Office of Equity and Human Rights is needed. We thank you for your time, and we look forward to continuing to work with the city around the development of equity strategies and tools that will benefit all Portlanders. Thank you.
My name is Roger Anthony. I'm a member of the Vision into Action Steering Committee. I served on the equity TAG with the City of Portland under Lisa and Bob, and I'm part of the creation committee that's working on developing the Office of Equity for the City of Portland. As members of the Technical Advisory Group, we spent more than a year studying, discussing, and reviewing the issues of equity in our community. As part of this, we met with many people employed by the city who graciously shared their knowledge of city issues and knowledge of city systems with us. Together, our group shaped a set of goals and strategies that are infused throughout the proposed Portland plan. We're gratified to see that our work has also inspired the proposal for the City of Portland's Office of Equity. Many of the accountability tools mentioned by Mayor Adams earlier and mentioned by Katie now will live in the Office of Equity. There can be no question that disparities, be they racial, economic, or educational, are increasing throughout our country. The initial emphasis of the Office of Equity will be focused on smaller issues than that. They'll work on coordinating and streamlining city policies promoting equity, many of them included in the Portland Plan. These will be policies developed recently, such as the analysis of city expenses by district, or policies that are already in place at some but not all bureaus. The office will also take part in building a database and helping create metrics for analyzing and progress and policies working toward equity. Beyond that, to promote the accountability and best practices throughout city government, the office will create and adopt a series of indicators to measure progress. A lot of this is unglamorous, fingernails dirty, wonky work. We think it's the proper foundation to build something enduring upon. In short, we're not reinventing the wheel, we're putting fresh tires on the car. The office will grow out of the existing Office of Human Relations infrastructure at minimal cost to the city. The initial budget allocation is just 1/8 of 1% of the Portland City budget. The work, the equity strategies included in the Portland Plan represent the crucial first steps to be taken on the path to a more equitable Portland, one in which the future of each individual is determined not by race or zip code or income. Gandhi said, "You can judge a society by how they treat its weakest members." With its emphasis on equity throughout the Portland Plan, our city can demonstrate that it's ready for that test. Thank you.
Thank you. The next three will be Carmen Madrid, Bill Scott, and Noel Dobson. And just a reminder, if you can announce your name first, that'd help us out. Thanks. Oh, Roberta Phillip. Thank you. So there's still another mic over there. Huh? Yeah. Carmen?
Evening. As the Portland Plan process has taken shape over the last few years, the city has emphasized the inclusion of equity in every area of Portland's development. The most recent drafts of the Portland Plan's strategic goals in education, economic development, and healthy neighborhoods take steps towards the emphasis on equity but fall frustratingly short. It's worth taking a moment to talk about what we mean by equity. At a very basic level, equity is about eliminating disparities suffered by communities of color, immigrants, refugees, and other historically marginalized groups in Oregon. These disparities occur in many different arenas. In housing, for instance, a recent audit test by the Fair Housing Council of Oregon and Portland Housing Bureau showed discriminatory or disparate treatment of renters in 64% of tests. In education, as earlier mentioned, graduation rates for students of color are well below those of their white peers. The Bureau of Planning and Sustainability itself sets out a definition of equity in the equity initiative guiding the full Portland Plan process, although sadly, no mention of this document appears in strategy area reports. The key to making Portland an equitable place to live is realizing that disparities are avoidable, that they're unjust, and that the city can and must take action to rectify this legacy of discrimination and marginalization. This is where the Portland Plan comes in. This response is intended to be a constructive critique of the draft strategy areas, as well as a roadmap for making Portland a more equitable city. In areas of education, some specific recommendations are: school curricula need to reflect Oregon's communities of color, immigrants, and refugees. Vocational training opportunities need to be available. Our education workforce needs to reflect Oregon's increasing diversity. In economic prosperity and affordability, the city should provide support and resources for people of color, immigrants, and refugees to open and continue to operate small businesses as a way of eliminating economic disparities. Partnering with community organizations, the city should develop an economic development corporation representing people of color, immigrants, and refugees, and also to develop a community partner advisory team, including representatives from communities of color, immigrants, and refugee community. With regards to healthy connected neighborhoods, this section is one of the only places in the Portland Plan draft reports that features a specific plank on equity. Unfortunately, occupying just one line on the page, the inclusion of equity here seems vague and hollow. The city's commitment to equity needs to be more than just the deployment of buzzwords. The city should commit to ensuring affordable housing in all of Portland's neighborhoods so that historically rooted communities are not pushed out in waves of gentrification. Offering spaces for communities of color, immigrants, and refugees to participate in cultural institutions, the city's commitment to this kind of community spirit should be more than just a farmer's market and a cultural event on every street. We certainly applaud the work of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, both in coordinating the Portland Plan process and the commitment that BPS has shown to engaging community stakeholders. It's time, however, for that commitment to actually turn into action. Sure, the city has a long way to go to achieve equity for all Portlanders. The Portland plan process is key to this effort, although the current draft has severe oversights and omissions in terms of concrete policy recommendations, and certainly there's room for improvement.
Thank you. Bill?
I'm Bill Scott, co-chair of the Sun System Coordinating Council, and basically here to say on behalf of the council that we're really very pleased with the plan, both the process and the product in the state that it's in now. When I met with you some time ago and we submitted numerous suggestions, the current draft is extremely responsive to what we've submitted, and we thank you very much for that. In particular, the fact that you've included the Sun System as a partner and called out specific strategies in all three of the integrated strategies of the plan, which is very appropriate since the goals of Sun are, first of all, academic success, second, the elimination of poverty, and third, building community, and they line up, you know, kind of perfectly with the Portland plan. And we also salute the central focus on equity, which in many ways is the central concern of the Sun System. We do have some specific comments, which I will ask Roberta to let you know what they are.
Good evening, members of the commission. Roberta Phillip, senior policy advisor to Multnomah County Chair Jeff Kogan and member of the Sun Coordinating Council. First off, thank you for your responsiveness to the plan, to our comments in the plan. And rather than reading off our specific comments, we will be mailing each of you a letter that contains those specific comments and where they would be reflected in the plan. Just to note, Sun is already supported via a city-county partnership, so this is work that we're already doing and will be continued to be reflected in the plan. So I will leave copies with Julie, and also you'll be receiving them individually.
Thank you. You want?
Institute. Myself and a number of health and equity stakeholders have been involved in the Portland Plan for over 3 years. I've served on the Mayor's Portland Plan Advisory Committee and co-chaired the plan's Human Health Technical Advisory Group with staff from the BPS and Multnomah County Health Department. I want to start by acknowledging the BPS staff who worked on the plan and make sure that you know they were very open and supportive of health stakeholders being engaged in this process along the way. They actively sought out our input and were responsive to our feedback and ideas both early on in the process as the city was framing its approach to health and later on when we had specific objectives and action items that we felt could play a great role in health. So I wanted to make sure you knew that. There are a lot of strong elements in the plan, and I encourage the commission to adopt it and to use it to guide future policymaking and investment in the city. Probably comes as no surprise to you that I'm very supportive of the Healthy Connected City strategy that public decisions benefit human and environmental health. When I talk to about the Portland plan to people, they're generally quite supportive of the city, that they should care about residents' health and should be using its resources to promote health. But the question that I hear and that I'm guessing you've heard and have considered is how? How do we consider health in our public decisions? What does it mean and what does it look like? For those that have been able to dive into the details of the plan, I think there's a lot to see about how we can do this, how we can align our priorities with health, and those that go way beyond just the Healthy Connected City strategy. By calling out economic prosperity and education, the plan already sets a foundation for improved health because a person's income and a person's education are two of the strongest determinants of their health. And by focusing these strategies targeting existing disparities in areas such as the graduation gap, early childhood education, small business support, and local hiring, we can make progress towards reducing health disparities that are significantly impacting our low-income residents and communities of color. In addition, the equity framework as a whole is about improving health. When achieving equity is defined as everyone having an opportunity to advance their well-being and to achieve their full potential, that includes being able to create health for themselves and their families. And since my colleagues had spoke to you about the working group that we've been involved in, I'll save myself 10 seconds and go on. Within the Healthy Connected City strategy, the plan does a pretty good job of identifying many elements of a healthy neighborhood, but describing our vision alone won't get us there. What does it mean to integrate health considerations into our policy planning and infrastructure decisions that impact our neighborhoods? It's about the types of projects we choose to spend our money and resources on, where in the city we develop those projects, and how those projects are designed and maintained. Integrating health into decision-making means having the information you need about health impacts when plans and projects are being drafted and decisions being considered. That comes down to bringing new partners and new data into the decision-making, and I'm encouraged to see the plan lay a future direction for strengthening and formalizing working relationships across health and planning disciplines. The plan can either be a pretty document that's going to sit on everyone's desk or a strategic tool that really guides our decisions about how we're building neighborhoods and a future for Portland residents. The plan states that it will be used to guide the comprehensive plan. And back, if you made it to page 118 on what I hope is the long version and not the short version, that the plan's going to be used to guide goal-based budgeting. These are really important factors that jumped out to me in the plan. And so I'll close today by asking each of you to do what you can do to make sure that happens, to make sure that the plan is used as we move forward with the comprehensive plan development and with very important issues like the goal-based budgeting that's been laid out at the end of the plan. So I thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you.
Irma? I have a question. Everybody's comments are very, very instructive, but I'm very curious, Carmen, of specifically you made some very strong assertions about the plan, and I know the staff has worked really, really hard on putting this together. So I don't want you to feel like you're on the spot, but if you would be so kind as to share with us specifically, what could the city do to eliminate the disparities that you described?
I think a lot of it is inclusiveness in a lot of the recommendations. And actually, this is a short version. We actually have more specific recommendations that we've sent.
Did you send them? Because we get a copy of them, Julie, what she's referring to. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
So I just want to follow up on Irma's comment. And I think for everybody who found something missing in the plan. And you know, to me, the plan, a big part of the plan is about how we connect policies in the different areas. You know, because it all has to work together. That's really the key to having an effective strategy. So I would encourage the most specific comments possible. You know, on page 37, this paragraph, you should really be talking about XYZ. Send us that, because that will help us immensely as we parse this. Thanks.
Thank you.
Other quick questions? Thank you. The next three are Bridget Lang, Ray Kennedy, and Uma. Bridget, you want to get started?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for this opportunity to give public comment on the Portland Plan. My name is Bridget Lang, and I am a representative of the Multnomah Youth Commission. I live in the North Portland neighborhood, and I am a sophomore here at Jefferson. As a representative of the NYC, I'm here to tell you tonight what we feel is missing from the Portland Plan. Before I start, I would like to thank BPS for the youth planning program. Without our cooperation with the youth planners, we as the NYC wouldn't be here to testify tonight. It is this access to the youth and adults in the youth planning program that helps support our involvement and implementation of this plan over the next 25 years. One thing we feel is especially missing from the Thriving Educated Youth section of the plan is a clear understanding of positive youth development, or PYD. PYD makes sure that all youth have the support, training, and opportunities they need to become healthy, successful adults. Ideally, youth should be valued for their experiences and not thought of as empty or broken while waiting for adults to fix them. Youth empowerment is also at the core of this PYD philosophy. Empowerment is a way to increase chances and opportunities for us to explore and develop ourselves, as well as speak for ourselves. PYD also prepares youth for the next steps in our lives. We can get the tools and knowledge we will need to make the choices that best fit our needs and where we are at in our lives. PYD also helps us grow and aspire to the people that we want to be when we grow up. For example, I'm a part of the Youth Advisory Council for my school's school-based health center. Here, youth are able to work with an AmeriCorps member to ensure that we as youth advisors are able to inform the rest of our school about the clinic services. Being in YAC lets me provide a voice for the school's youth as well as a voice for the clinic, which is a great way for me to develop leadership skills. All in all, I feel that doing things with a positive youth development lens helps us achieve and reach our goal as youth. And as part of the NYC, we believe that this philosophy needs to be explicit in the Portland Plan, especially in the Thriving Educated Youth section. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy hearing from the other youth commissioners and youth planners this evening.
Thank you.
Right? Thank you. Wow. I'm really, really happy to see all of the people in this room who want to make Portland a great city for all of us. My name is Ray Kennedy, and I go to Trillium Charter School, and I'm a member of the Multnomah Youth Commission. You know, if we look up at this fabulous projected screen, we can see that thriving, educated youth represents one-third of the Portland Plan. What this means can be hard to grasp at first, but what it really means is that we, as youth, have to be involved in this city. You can't create a city or a piece of policy or a government that works to try and create things for youth if it doesn't involve youth. I think this is very simple and very obvious. If you try and create something for someone, it should involve them. In this case, I think that policy for youth should involve youth. I think that that is equitable. Ha. Anyway. Yeah, I was happy I could say that word. All right, equity, equality, justice, great things to build a city on. Great things to move a city forward for, yes. So one way that we can have good youth-adult partnerships and make sure that youth are really a part of this city so that in 25 years, we can be in the fabulous places that you are now, so that we can be making these decisions, so that we can be really caring about the city that we've lived in, that we live in, and that we will live in, is if we can just have some very basic youth-adult partnerships, so that youth can learn from adults, and adults can teach youth. And this way, youth will really feel valued. And they'll feel like, wow, I'm part of this city. And they can be like, I have a purpose, and I'm not going to drop out of school, and I'm not going to go to college. Circuitous, yeah. And I am going to be a part of this fabulous city. So what is an example of a youth-adult partnership? Well, the Multnomah Youth Commission is an example of that, and I'm very happy to be a part of it. Yeah. So I think I've made my point. I think it's crucial to have youth at the table making decisions for youth. Thank you.
Thank you. Uma?
Hello, my name is Uma Abdullahi. I'm in my first year at Portland State University, and I'm proud to be a youth planner at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. When I first started as a youth planner, I didn't realize how much city planning and land use would affect our lives, and it is because of YPP that I'm learning how to make a positive difference for my community and our city. I hope that my work as a youth planner can create equitable changes for all youth in Portland, particularly those of us who experience struggles and experience inequity. Thank you again for this opportunity to speak on behalf of the diverse youth and perspectives in Portland. Tonight is the first of three testimonies that we have organized to share our experiences and suggestions of how to improve the Portland Plan. We are looking forward to seeing you at Parkrose High School and in downtown Portland. to tell you our specific changes we would like to make to the Portland Plan. I am here to talk about youth voice, a theme that was touched on in the plan, but not to the level of importance that we as youth feel it should be upon. When youth voice is real, you have the feeling of security, hopefulness, and value. This is a give and take relationship. There is a give and take where both youth and adults take the responsibility to give support, trust, and a solution-based problem solving. Adults give so that youth can give, and in result, hope is the positive decisions that can be made. Youth voice and civic engagement are crucial now for our future. If the Portland Plan is a plan for the for 25 years into our future, youth are the most important because they will be most impacted by the future we are planning now. If the Portland Plan does not include youth in creating these solutions, we think it is a potential waste of time and money of the city's investments. The plan won't be relevant to those who the city is planning for. For example, would the Planning Commission ever consider an East Portland Action Plan without the voices of East Portlanders? We would hope not. We feel the same consideration should be given to the policies that impact the youth community. We as youth want to play a role in our futures. There is a stereotype that youth aren't interested, but we do care. We do care about the future of Portland, and we want to be a part of making Portland the best place it can be. We want to be taken seriously and be a part of this process. Lastly, the overall theme of this plan is equity. We are the diverse population in Portland. For instance, 48% of Portland public schools are currently students of color. We are the changing demographics that the Portland Plan is talking about, and we are here today. It would be a bit wasteful and inequitable to not include youth voice when talking about strategies to handle the high level of racial and ethnic demographic changes that youth represent for Portland's future. Thank you so much for having us tonight, and we look forward to seeing you in our many visits.
Thank you. Great testimony. Just a sec. Are there any questions? Gary?
Ray, I was wondering if you might share with us a bit whether you have some thoughts about how we as adults can also learn from you.
Thank you very much for that question. I think that really when it comes down to learning, you have to really want to learn. And that's something that I want to do, and that's something that I'm sure you want to do too. And so when it comes to youth trying to teach adults, I think that there are some programs like the Multnomah Youth Commission and like YPP, Youth Planning Program, that are, that are a start in that direction as places where youth can get together and give ideas to people who want to learn from youth. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I just have a quick kind of comment. And you had said youth will be coming to the other meetings with specifics. I would like to hear, I guess, how the Portland Plan should empower youth to be successful in the next 25 years. You talked about empowered youth, youth solutions, youth partnerships, but specifically, if you look at the Portland Plan, where does that tie in from your standpoint as youth? I mean, a lot of adults have looked at that, and now we need the youth kind of come back and say, is that correct of how we do that long term?
I think an example for me was when I looked at it, and it said a 95 to 100% graduation rate. For a lot more students to graduate, that's absolutely perfect, and I agree with that idea, but I think that setting students and youth up for that to happen, I think, is more important. It's really great to say that we'll do that, but I think that building that sort of relationship that, yeah, this is a very hard goal to reach, but we as adults are willing to work with it, and we're willing to find out different strategies to cope with this.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks. Bob Salinger, James Paul Brown, and Don McElroy.
Good evening. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the Conservation Director for Portland Audubon Society. I also serve on the Portland Parks Board and the Board of East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District, and worked on the Portland Watershed Plan for many years with the city. But I'm here tonight representing Audubon. Overall, we're very impressed with the work the city has done, focusing in particularly on natural resources. We think they've done a very nice job of capturing and integrating the multiple benefits from natural resource protection. It's one of the better documents I've seen in terms of capturing the health benefits, the economic benefits, as well as the environmental benefits. I also think this is a good document in terms of articulating the importance of equitable distribution of the benefits and burdens of environmental protection. So we're pleased to see that as well. So overall, we really commend the city both on the process and on the product. A few areas, and we will submit detailed comments to the city with circles and arrows and 8x10 glossy photographs of where these things should go. But a few areas I just want to highlight for you very briefly tonight that we think there should be some more detail in terms of the five-year actions. One is watershed planning. One of the big challenges for the city with the watershed plan was to make that something that is owned by every bureau, not just the Bureau of Environmental Services. And we think the document could do a better job of articulating the need for green infrastructure, that it's an opportunity, that every project is an opportunity to incorporate green infrastructure, the objective of having multiple benefits from green infrastructure as opposed to just pipe solutions. And I think that's especially important at a time when our infrastructure bureaus are being questioned for the use of their funds, that we really clearly articulate that that is an appropriate use, that it's a citywide objective, and that these multiple benefits are really important. It's the best way to spend that money. Number two is parks. This report does a very good job of detailing the importance of access to parks. But one area that we really would recommend focusing in on the next 5 years is the funding gap that we have and the dependence on the general fund. Parks right now has a $400 million deficit in terms of operations and maintenance. It's an incredible deficit, and we've got to get our hands around that because we need to take care of what we have. So looking at strategies for dealing with that massive deficit and also the equity deficits as well. We also think the report could be more specific in terms of actual park projects for prioritization. If equity is a priority, then we need to really articulate where the big initiatives are in East Portland, for example, and Nick Fish's E205 initiative, things like that, the East Buttes. There's some incredible opportunities. We should really articulate those more clearly. Superfund. Superfund is probably the biggest environmental issue coming at the city over the next couple of years, and this report is pretty silent on that. We'd like to see some objectives that specifically state that the city will continue to take a leadership role, do some early action projects, really be a leader. And that's something that if we do, it starts to free up a lot of the issues that have circulated around the river over the past 10 years or so. And we start to get it cleaned up, we start to create opportunities, do mitigation banks, and the city takes that leadership role, I think a lot of our other problems start to fade out a little bit. Fifth, climate change. We'd like to see a little more language in there about climate change. It sort of fades in this plan for some reason. It's a big priority for the city, and especially not just end-of-tailpipe solutions, but also landscape resiliency. How are we going to deal with increased water levels over time? So specifically some floodplain objectives. Sure. Very last thing I'll say is Goal 9 issues. The big issues on the river are lack of land and how do we balance expanding our industrial landscape while also protecting natural resources. That's come up in River Plan. It's coming up in Hayden Island. We've got to get our hands around how a landlocked city continues to expand its industrial land base without destroying its natural resources at the same time. Where do we reach our limits and how do we deal with that? So thank you very much. And again, I appreciate the work the city staff has done.
Thank you. James?
Yes, I'm James Paul Brown. I'm here representing the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods, and we have a procedural request. I'm going to read this, and you'll have copies of it. This is to the commissioners. Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods represents 12 neighborhoods in Inner North and Northeast Portland. Our neighborhoods are vitally concerned with the goals, policies, and actions contained in the Portland Plan, and we would be pleased to offer testimony on it. Unfortunately, we're unable to do so within the brief comment period allowed us. 1 month is not sufficient time for a volunteer organization such as ours to study and comment on this ambitious document. We have three standing committees: land use and transportation, safety and livability, and community economic development. These committees engage dozens of volunteers who regularly study, debate, and act on issues raised by the Portland Plan. All of these committees should be weighing in on the plan, and all of them meet monthly. Any comments they would make after studying the plan would have to be approved by our board of directors, which also meets monthly. Your process simply does not make time for our process, and thus we fear you're missing out on important feedback, not only from NECN, but from the six other neighborhood coalitions and many neighborhood associations who should be at the table. We understand that there will be further opportunities to comment on the next draft of the Portland Plan. That, however, will be a new document requiring a new review, and we will still have our same deliberative process. We respectfully request that the comment period for this draft be extended by at least 30 days. Beyond that, we hope and strongly recommend that the next draft allows at least 2 months for comment. Sincerely, Chris Lopez, Board of Directors, Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods.
Thank you. So just to be clear, you're asking for 30 days on this comment period?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening. My name is Don McGilvery, and I'm a resident of inner southeast Portland and have been involved with planning as a major interest for 30 plus years. And I've been following this plan since the beginning. I'd like to say thank you to everybody involved for a great plan. The two-year process has been a good example of public involvement. The workshops and the outreach to many organizations were very good. The public asked that all Portland be involved in the creation of the plan and that everyone is also involved in its implementation. The public asked for a plan where issues are integrated together rather than isolated into the classic categories of housing, transportation, environment, etc. Concern was expressed about the compartmentalization of government, nonprofit sector, and private business. Getting many organizations to work together with government is very important. Leveraging resources from government and business together along with the generosity of the public is equally important. The best ideas for implementation come from those most actively involved in city issues and those who must live with the results, which reflects some of the testimony previously. The emphasis on equity is long overdue and is one of the great strengths of the plan. The three strategic areas, economics, education, and a healthy, connected city, are also very significant. The background reports, the community forums, are a wealth of information about Portland and will be useful for many years in the future with the comprehensive plan, the Central City Plan, and many others. While my overall opinion of the plan is very positive, I do have a number of serious concerns about it. There's not time in 3 minutes to express them, and I hope to testify at the next two hearings about a few of them. I would like to say that more time may be needed to review the testimony you will receive so that appropriate changes may be made to the plan. This plan will need to live beyond this city administration and through several other administrations. It will also need to thrive among a world in transition. The future is difficult to anticipate, but this is a great start. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any other testimony at this time? I think what we'll do is take a 15-minute break. Thank you very much for your testimony. And then we'll come back, and if there's further testimony, we'll hear that. Otherwise, have a discussion about what we heard today, and maybe ask Eric to come up at that time.